There was a time when most baby boomers thought we would never get old. We baby boomers share a collective memory, Beatlemania, rock and roll, TV shows like The Howdy Doody Show, which I'm sure most of you have never heard of, The Mickey Mouse Club, which was wonderful, The Twilight Zone, which scared us, and even the lighthearted Happy Days. Now we're aging and we're seeing that a large percentage of our parents, you know, members of the greatest generation, are now gone, and we're now more aware of our own mortality. So issues that would have generated little interest from us just 20 years ago are now starting to grab our attention. We're looking at trusts, we're looking at our estates, and learning more about financial elder abuse so we can prepare for what inevitably will come. Our generation is not one to stand for the status quo either, so we figure out ways of helping ourselves, we innovate ways of helping ourselves and our parents and our children, and this is becoming more meaningful for us year by year. Now, one individual who has worked and written about this field is attorney Michael Hackard, whose new book, The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse, gives us insight into this world and the tools to protect ourselves and our family. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
So you write that 1 in 10 seniors, 5 million people, are victims of elder abuse and neglect every year. Really, you say it's a silent epidemic of crime. Give us a sense of the situation.
Well, it truly is a silent epidemic. A lot of it has to do with the aging of America. You know, there are about 40 million people now that are age 65 and above. I think that's about 13% of the population. By 2029, we're said to be 20% of the population. So you just see this higher incidence of abuse. And 1 in 9 seniors, in fact, is reported being abused, neglected, or exploited in the last 12 months in whatever fashion. So it's a big problem.
Yeah. So and that's only the ones that are reported. How much of this actually goes unreported?
Well, the interesting thing, it's said that only 1 in 44 cases is actually reported. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's an astounding number.
Yeah. All right. So this is something that is kind of, you know, quiet, that's going on, that's gets some press once in a while. We're trying to bring it out into the light here as well. So where does this abuse generally come from? Is it institutions? Is it family members? How does that break down?
Well, unfortunately, it's about 90% family members and caregivers, with family members being the majority of it. Now, in identifying family members that do this, I throw in a few caveats, but in my experience, and I think the general experience is, it's when it's family member, he's usually a dependent child who's not working, maybe has substance abuse, and for a matter of months or even years is living with a parent and fully financially dependent on that parent. And of course, ultimately, the parent becomes dependent on that child and very vulnerable.
Yeah, I've seen that in my own practice. But I mean, there's a good side to that as well, because if other siblings are busy running their lives, maybe they live in different parts of the country, it's comforting to know that you've got a sibling that's, you know, in the house taking care of things. Where does it go over the line?
Well, it goes over the line when the other siblings start getting isolated from their parent, almost that the abusing child in that case has a feeling like of ownership mm-hmm. of the parent, mm-hmm. of the access to the parent, isolates the parent, and ultimately a feeling of ownership and somehow deserving or being entitled to the parent's assets. Yeah. That's when it goes over the line.
Wow.
Way to rebut it is to have full transparency between the siblings, where, you know, one agrees to do one thing and one another, however it is that's split up, so that somehow, even if they're across the country, there's some participation.
Checks and balances, I would.
That's a good think. Way to say it.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your background. So you're an attorney dealing in estates and trusts. How did you come into this area of the practice?
Well, when I started as a lawyer over 40 years ago, I was in an estate and trust. Well, then it was basically an estate and wills law firm.
Okay.
And none of the senior members wanted to litigate. And I did. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. I still do. And so back in those days, I started to do will contest. And I was successful at it, enjoyed it, got away from it for a long time. And now in my, 40 some years of practice, about 5 years ago, I think I just started to step up, seeing that what was happening and with baby boomers and with people that I knew and their parents, and I thought, well, it's time to get back in. Mm-hmm. And now getting back in, it's really it's a changed world, because yeah. whether you're in Florida or New York or California, you know, the use of trust, irrevocable trust and revocable trust or living trust is widespread. And 40 years ago, it wasn't that way at all. Of course, now elder financial abuse is widespread in our, you know, we live longer. We have different diseases when we live longer.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
things have changed.
Yeah. So what was once something that would end a person's life is now turned into a chronic illness that's manageable, and people are living a lot longer. But, you know, then there are issues of cognitive impairment and physical impairment and things that now come in that, you know, we all are familiar with as we live longer. So if I'm a sibling, and just for the moment, forget this idea that I've got another sibling living in the house, what are some of the signs that I should look for? Because I'm kind of busy with my own world, and I'm assuming I'm hiring a professional and they're telling me everything is fine. What are some of the telltale signs I need to look for?
Well, telltale signs that include liabilities and unpaid bills.
Okay.
That means somebody's taking some money. Sometimes you'll see transfers of Social Security or VA accounts. Sometimes that's absolutely necessary and important, but other times it's just a way to obstruct any kind of transparency into the mm-hmm. senior's life. And suspicious withdrawals, vanishing assets. You go in the house and, you know, hey, where's the silver set, or where is this or that? Those are some of the things that become obvious. And secrecy with regard to estate documents. Sometimes a child, I've seen it many times, where a child says, oh, don't worry about it, brother or sister. It's all under control. I've got it under control. Well, if it's under control, let's share those documents and know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. With my stepfather years ago, we had a caretaker, and we found that there were calls to the Bahamas on his phone, and I think it was Haiti at the time. And, you know, obviously he was not making those kinds of calls. So, I mean, that was a quick sign for us, an easy one to say, hey, you know, it's obvious who made these calls, and, you know, we were able to get rid of her. But I guess even just little things like that you need to watch out for. When do you get an attorney involved? At what point do you, you see some kind of crime being committed, do you call the police? What are your first steps there?
Well, I think it does make sense to get an experienced attorney, someone knowledgeable in the area, when you start seeing those signs. Mm-hmm. When you suspect things that are going on, and I can think of things over the years, such as people that are going to the local Safeway or other store and are supposed to just be buying food, and you see, you know, $400 for a grocery bill, which is what's happening as a caretaker, or somebody's taking out an additional $300 in cash. Mm-hmm. Or you see suspicious bank accounts, those kind of things. I think you do bring in lawyers, experienced lawyers. The other thing is, many times people call Adult Protective Services. We have them throughout the country. Mm-hmm. And I think they're very important, but you do get mixed reviews on them.
We had a situation in our own practice where we did call them, and they were terrific, I have to say. They solved the problem. They brought in the police. They took care of the people that were taking advantage of this client of ours, and they got him situated in a good assisted living facility. I was very, very happy with that. Just a personal note.
Yeah, and that's terrific. And there are a lot of success stories. You know, I admire them for what they do. I do have the caveat that it's not it's not the magic bullet per se, because mm-hmm. sometimes they'll just go out and visit the elder and speak to him or her alone and say, is everything okay? The elder says, okay.
Yeah.
And they're gone.
That's right. Well, in this case, the elder was saying, I'm fine. You know, I don't have a problem. I know these people. I like these people, but we could tell that he was being abused. You know, I want to talk briefly. We don't have much time, but, you know, setting up trust means that there's trustees that can take over in times of, you know, parental, let's say, decline. And how do you watch the trustees? What rules do they have? They have rules to follow. Who's minding the store there? What's one of your experiences with that?
Well, yeah, once they become the trustee, they do have throughout the state some duty to account to the maker of the trust, as well as to beneficiaries that are vested, say. Mm-hmm. We get into trustee fights all the time. And I have lots of examples, but there's one going on right now that's a securities firm, essentially. And their annual fees of what they're taking out of this trust are twice the amount of what's being distributed to beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. I mean, this wasn't really set up to benefit the securities firm.
Right.
So when you see secrecy in trustees, you see overbilling, sometimes horrendous overbilling.
Yeah.
You know, $500,000 in fees to a trustee, ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you got a problem and somebody needs to step in.
Yeah, gotcha. The book is The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. All proceeds from the sale of this go to the Alzheimer's Foundation, right?
That's right. That's a good spot to go. They do great work in terms of helping people with Alzheimer's and families and helping bring issues so that they can be addressed in public policies.
I've read the book. It's a good book. It's a necessary book if you find yourself approaching that situation or in that situation. Once again, The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. My guest is attorney Michael Hacker. To hear this segment again and to hear all of our segments on our show, do not forget to go to our website, which is stevepomerantz.com. Don't forget that we podcast, we use all forms of social media for you to get to us. And if you sign up at our website, we'll send you a weekly update of every segment that we do, where you can listen to the segment individually, read a summary about it, or read the transcripts. It's all there for you to enjoy this information that we provide to you. Michael Hackard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Steve.